Your SteveJonesShow.com audio is coming up next. Audio and podcast of The Steve Jones Show, a service of Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street, Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, Routes 11 and 15, Hummel's Wharf.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is The Steve Jones Show on WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, filling in for Steve Jones, here's Kevin Herr.
In the Sunbury Motors Studio here on the Steve Jones Show, all by my lonesome. That's right, I finally get a chance to solo, much to Steve's displeasure, I'm sure. But what does he know? He's flying to the kind of Midwest. He's headed to the Big Ten Championship, and he is in the air right now. So, you know, he'll never know. Got a great show for you lined up still. Steve had a chance to talk with Malcolm Moran. We'll have that interview coming up for you in the first hour. Then Allie Stevens will go back in Eagles history and talk with Vince Papale about his stint with the Eagles. And, of course, a little bit more about the movie as well that came out a few years ago. And then we'll get ready for the Patriot League championship game of the tournament coming up tonight in the automatic bid into the big dance. We'll have Doug Birdsong from Soika Pavilion. That is coming up a little bit later on here before 5 o'clock. That is all on the Steve Jones Show here on WKOK. But as promised, we're going to kick things off with Steve's conversation with Malcolm Moran. He's a longtime reporter, not only for the New York Times, but Newsday, the Chicago Tribune, the USA Today. He is the has the position of being the Knight Chair in Sports Journalism and Society at the John S. and James L. Knight Chair at Knight Chair for Sports Journalism and Society at University Park and Penn State. I got my colleges mixed up. It's a busy day. So that's what's coming up here this afternoon. Steve and Malcolm Moran, part one, here on The Steve Jones Show.
Malcolm, it's great to have you on the show.
Steve, thanks for having me.
All right. You wrote an article in the Philadelphia Inquirer that was published, I believe, February 13th. And in that article, you talked about transparency, and of course it was focusing around Penn State. And you mentioned that six of the 120 schools in Division I-A football had open locker rooms. The other 114 are in the same situation Penn State is. They either bring them outside the locker room or also have a designated media room. Give us the tone and tenor of the article that you wanted to present in the Inquirer on February 13th.
Well, the point I was trying to make was as a symbolic form of transparency, because you keep hearing that word associated with the university as it goes forward, and the importance of transparency. And I thought one statement of symbolism would be to join that small minority of major college teams that opens the room afterwards, the way most every college used to operate once upon a time, where I fall back to Roger Valdeseri, who I'm sure you know was the sports information director at Notre Dame for years and years, one of the most respected people in the history of his industry. And the point that Roger has always made is that where it is done right, the best part of the college athletic product is the people that play the games. I mean, that's the story that universities, especially such as this one, given the academic achievements and all the off-field achievements that football players historically have had here, anything that can let the public get to know these people a little bit better and in a more natural setting is a healthy thing. And now, through the years, issues have come up, and I pointed this out in the essay in the Inquirer. The reason that most schools decided to close the dressing room and set up an interview room format is because starting in the early to mid-70s, there were more and more women getting involved in the sports journalism industry, and now you had the issue of females going into dressing rooms where people were getting changed. Well, as I pointed out, having covered the New York Cosmos when Major League Soccer became a huge thing, and they were getting 70,000 plus on a regular basis in the Meadowlands, and the way they dealt with that issue was they gave everybody a bathrobe, and it was no big deal, and they could get dressed in private, and people could get information. And the bottom line was you had a chance to get to know these people and see them in a setting that was more familiar and comfortable for them.
That was an era of Pelé, Franz Beckenbauer, Giorgio Canalia. I mean, they were the story many a night in New York, and they had an open policy.
Well, and it was a wild scene there, because I can remember running late for a game, and I squeeze into this elevator in the Meadowlands about 40 minutes before the game is going to start. It's this bright Sunday morning, and here's this guy kind of shriveled up in the corner of the elevator who clearly appeared to have a rough night the previous night. And when I looked twice, just because I felt bad for this guy, I realized it was Mick Jagger. I mean, that's what the dressing room was like. I mean, you would have to wait for Canalia to get through with Jagger or Henry Kissinger, you know, to talk about where the game turned, and, you know, and then he would politely get on to us. So we knew our place, but the idea was you could get to know people.
I'm stunned about the Jagger story. As for 1978, and I'll give you an example. 1982, Penn State, it was going to be a big year for Kurt Warner. He really thought he had a shot himself personally at the Heisman. And the opening game, and Joe Paterno knew the tone and tenor of his team. He ends up winning a national championship with his team. But he knew to do what he needed balance. So he threw the ball a lot in the opening four games of the season. And Penn State rolled through. They beat Rutgers. They beat Maryland. Of course, the big win over Nebraska and so forth. That opening win over Rutgers, they threw the ball a lot. And I think Warner only had 40 yards rushing. And Ron Bracken, locker room was open. Penn State did not have a media room until 1983 when Sarah Jane Freely from the Philadelphia Inquirer started covering the team. And Ron goes into the locker room, and I'm paraphrasing now how the story goes. I'm sure I'll make a mistake here somewhere, but at least I'll give you the tone of it. Warner is upset to the point where I believe he's crying. And Ron, of course, sees this, captures it, talks about it, and it was must reading. You in 1978 covering the team, Penn State opens up. They had to beat, I don't know, was it Rutgers? They had to
Rutgers,
beat Temple. They had to beat Temple first. Then they had to play Rutgers. And that Rutgers game was before the infamous or the famous 19-0 win at Ohio State. The locker room opens, and you tell the story.
Well, clearly, all anybody was interested in was Ohio State, because Arch Leister, who was a freshman that year, was already getting enormous publicity. And you have a Woody Hayes team that clearly is going to throw the ball far more often than history had suggested. And Penn State, as a Northeast independent, was going into the heart of the Big Ten, playing against a traditional power. So the whole town is, I mean, the nanosecond that the home opener ended, all anybody's thinking about is Ohio State. So, of course, we go in and we've got Ohio State questions. And I remember hearing this commotion behind me in the doorway, and in bursts through the door, here's Joe, saying, now I'm paraphrasing, but he said with no small amount of conviction, the only one here who's going to talk about Ohio State is me, thereby ending any number of question and answer sessions on that subject. And what I found out years later when I went back to look online is that there was a student columnist for the Daily Collegian who apparently was somewhat upset that his angle had just been removed by the head coach's dictum. And so in a column talking about how the pressure was clearly getting to Joe, he linked him with Genghis Khan and Idi Amin, who I think didn't throw the ball as well as Joe's offenses usually did. But nonetheless, I mean, the student was a little upset. But the value of that is that it gave you a small glimpse into what people were thinking. I mean, without playing shrink or anything, I mean, it gave you a sense of the plot line for the next week. And it's those kind of glimpses that are harder and harder for either broadcasters or the traditional print types to pass on to their audiences, because everything is so far behind all these walls. And I'm talking about the industry overall, not just Penn State.
Right.
Jeff Nelson's staff does a wonderful job executing interview room formats, which can be a challenge, especially when you're on the road and scrambling around. But, I can remember a column several years ago that Dan Shaughnessy wrote in the Boston Globe during the finals when the Celtics were playing, I believe, the Lakers. And the point of the column was how impossible it is at the professional level now to have any idea what the people are like that you're covering. Where when Bob Ryan was the beat reporter covering the Celtics for the Globe, or when Dan was doing it, you would travel with them. You'd come down and have breakfast with them in the coffee shop, just because you were part of the same small group. And you would talk about your families, and you'd talk about all kinds of things, many of which had nothing to do with basketball. But it would give you a sense of who they were, and it would give them a sense of you. For instance, I know I'm jumping around a little, but the reason that the Friday night sessions here, when Joe would come and talk to the people coming in to cover the game, the reason that they were so great was because you were talking about anything but football.
Exactly.
And people that were parachuting into this community that had never covered Joe or his program were able to get a sense of him that was away from, the daily drumbeat stuff. And he could get a sense of you. He would always ask you what you were reading. He would ask you where, what high school you were from, because I'm convinced he knew somebody from every high school in the history of the world.
He probably did.
He pretty much did. But, it was that personal level that I really miss. And I consider myself really lucky to have gotten in on the tail end of that, when you had a chance to get to know people as people and get a little bit of an understanding of what makes them tick.
Also, Penn State is in the vast majority. 114 out of the 120 Division I schools have the same policy that Penn State does.
Correct.
But among the six that have an open policy, Auburn, which is a year from removed from being the national champion, they have an open policy.
Correct. And two of the schools, and this surprised me, this information, by the way, came from the Football Writers Association of America, which does a great job advocating transparency and access. Two of the programs that in recent years had been given credit for having open dressing rooms, Miami and USC, were not open this past year. And, you go back to the success on the field of the Pete Carroll era, and practices were wide open. The post-game dressing room was wide open. Didn't seem to hurt their winning percentage. And in fact, one of the things I made a reference to in that Inquirer essay was one of the great moving scenes, thanks to the SC dressing room being open, was when the Trojans won at South Bend in 05, beating Notre Dame at the end on the play that Irish fans like to refer to as the Bush Push, when Leinart had a little help getting into the end zone at the end. And their dressing room is open, and I and a number of other people go in, and it's kind of the standard happy dressing room scene, and they're singing Fight On, and it was quite a scene. Well, I leave, and who do I see walking toward me? It's Charlie Weiss and his son, who was then, I think, about 12 or so. And I knew from having spent a lot of time there and knowing what the layout is, the only place he could possibly be going in that direction is the visiting team's dressing room. So I just peel in behind him and kind of do a little 180 and follow him in. And here's this wonderful scene where you get the shocked looks on all these SC players as they're yelling and screaming. And the first ones that spot them started, shushing their teammates, and then the room falls silent. And Weiss only spoke for about 20 seconds, and basically it was, "Hey, fellas, I just wanted to say that was a great game, and best of luck, stay healthy, I hope you run the table, good luck." And, would that have been mentioned in an interview room? Sure. It would have come out pretty quickly. But the chance to be there and to be able to describe it for your audience, whoever the audience happens to be, I mean that's what can make the whole experience richer and let people understand the personal relationships that are involved in all these games.
In fact, yes, 1970, when Colorado stopped Penn State's 31-game unbeaten streak, Joe went into the Colorado locker room and congratulated mm-hmm. them on this. And those who were able to travel, they were able to see and to witness what he had done.
I remember Bill Mallory mm-hmm. at IU when IU had Anthony Thompson and had a shot at the Rose Bowl, I believe in 87, and it came down to a game at East Lansing late. And IU loses on the road at Michigan State, and Mallory goes into the Spartan dressing room and was screaming at them as if he was their coach, telling them, like, go to Pasadena and win this game for us, meaning the conference. I mean, they're just wonderful scenes. You know, and the flip side of that is when people are devastated by a loss and still stand up and answer the same endless questions game after game, like you remember that 20, 25 plus years ago. I mean, I remember when Penn yes. State won at South Bend in 90 on the field goal at the end.
Yes.
I mean, seeing Chris Zorich in tears at his locker, but standing there and answering every question. Zorich and Jerome Bettis, both. And you know how it works when you get waves of people. And I mean, the reason that that people in that position would hear the same questions over and over is not because we're insensitive and we're badgering them. It's that, you know, as a reporter, you have so many places to get to after a game that you've just arrived and you missed the first three waves, but you have to ask the same obvious question. And to see people in that position, especially people 18 to 22 years old, showing that much maturity and patience, even when, you know, years of effort has just gone down the drain. I mean, Notre Dame thought it could win a national championship that year.
They were number one going into the game.
Right. And you know, and here we are in 2012, and I can close my eyes and see Bettis and Zorich in front of their lockers in showing that kind of maturity. So, I mean, there are all kinds of things that the audience can learn about, particularly people at the student level, and the way they respond to things when you can get into their environment.
We'll have more with Malcolm Moran coming up. This is the Steve Jones Show. Steve on the way to the Big Ten Tournament. And don't forget, you'll be able to hear the first game against Indiana coming up tomorrow here on WKOK, beginning at 1:30. So there'll be an abbreviated end to the Steve Jones Show tomorrow due to the Penn State game. Again, tip-off is set for somewhere around 2 o'clock. It is the second game of the night, so you kind of have to take that, I guess, as a little gray area with a start time, but we're expecting to be on the air at 1:30 with the pregame show as Penn State starts their run in the Big Ten tournament. And, you know, like they said yesterday, it's as Coach Chambers said yesterday, it's one of those situations where you just got to play it out and play like you have nothing to lose. And hopefully Penn State will be able to do that tomorrow and pull a little bit of an upset. We'll have more with Malcolm Moran coming up. Don't forget, we also have Ali Stevens' interview with Vince Papale, and we'll check in with Doug Birdsong, who is going to be at the Soika Pavilion tonight for the Patriot League Championship and the automatic bid to the tournament. One other thing, too, that we'll have in the second half hour, too, Fran Fischer. If you missed Steve's interview with Fran Fischer, we'll have that coming up for you this afternoon. And, of course, all this is available later on tonight, if you miss any of it, via podcast or download digitally at stevejonesshow.com. That's stevejonesshow.com.
Well, Walter's out here in Beaver Springs, and it's truck month at Beaver Motors Chrysler Dodge Jeep and Ram. Now, I don't know about you, but I'm excited about this new Ram 1500 Crew Cab with a free Ram Box. What do you carry in your Ram Box? Fishing rods? Firearms? No, in my case, the
beverage
of choice. There's room in the back for over 200 cans of
beverage
per side, plus ice and a ring of bologna. And in the cab, in the floorboards, even more cooler space for
beverage
or sandwiches. Plus, there's special compartments under the seat. And of course, there's always the
beverage
holders built into the center console. Whether it's St. Patty's Day, July 4th, or that special holiday Gilly and me like to call Thursday, you can always kick back and enjoy an ice cold
beverage.
Plus, lease rates are as low as $299 per month with zero due at signing. And for you commercial guys, Ram is offering an additional $1,000 commercial bonus cash on all trucks. Beaver Motors between Seamless Grove and Lewistown on Route 522 in Beaver Springs or online at www.beavermotors.net.
Beaver Motors is not allowed to endorse any particular brand of soft drink.
Live from Progressive.
Flo here. Today I'm talking about Progressive Snapshot Discount. It's our biggest discount yet. It's the Grand Canyon of discounts. It's the white whale of keeping cash in your pocket. It's so big astronauts will say, I can see the Snapshot Discount from way up here. Well, you get the point.
The Snapshot Discount. It's new, it's a big deal, and it's finally here. Learn more at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and its affiliates, Mayfield Village, Ohio. Prices vary based on how you buy. Snapshot is not available in all states.
Welcome back to the Biore Skincare Face Anything Hotline. This week's topic, combination skin.
Hi, my friends keep tagging pictures of me and my T-zone looks so shiny. Any advice?
Unless you want to keep untagging, try new Biore Combination Skin Balancing Cleanser. It laser targets dirt and oil without stripping natural moisture, balancing combination skin.
So with Biore, I can actually look forward to uploads?
Yep, with Biore, you'll be ready 24/7. Biore Skincare. Face anything.
Looking to get the best tax refund possible? Call H&R Block at Sears in the Susquehanna Valley Mall at 372-1040. Our highly trained tax professionals will make sure you get the maximum refund you deserve. Plus, we'll guarantee our work will be accurate or we'll pay any resulting penalties and even support you in the event of an audit. That's how confident we are that when it comes to taxes, you should never settle for less. Call us today at 372-1040 and make an appointment with an experienced tax professional. That number again is 372-1040. H&R Block, never settle for less.
March means not basketball. It's Susquehanna Heartland Wine Trail Month with Shade Mountain Winery. All through March, enjoy live entertainment each Saturday with local live bands and fun food pairings throughout the weekends. Admission is free with a wine trail ticket or pay a cover charge at the door. And don't forget to sample and purchase Shade Mountain's fine wines while you're there. It's a great escape from cabin fever and a terrific way to bring in spring. Shade Mountain Winery, Route 104 between Middleburg and Penns Creek. See more at Shade Mountain Winery. Winery.com.
News Radio 1070 WKOK wants you to know about the people and organizations that help make the Susquehanna Valley a better place to live.
Stepping Out is a beginner walk-run program for women at the Elysburg Community Park. It's every Tuesday, 6 p.m. beginning March 20th. All women are welcome, ages 12 and up. Sessions include a group walk-run, motivational mentors, and brief presentations on various fitness and health-related topics. For more info, call 350-3964 or email steppingoutwalkrun@gmail.com.
This is the Steve Jones Show. Kevin Herr filling in for Steve Jones on his way out to get the Big Ten tournament started. And that'll be tomorrow here on WKOK. Well, actually, he's not going to get it started. It's actually going to be game two. And that'll get underway with the pregame at 1:30 here on WKOK and on WKOK.com. Coming up in the next half hour, more with Steve's interview with Malcolm Moran. We'll also have Vince Papale coming up in the 4 o'clock hour with Allie Stevens. Fran Fisher, if you missed his conversation with Steve a couple of weeks ago, we'll have that again for you as well. And I'll be joined by Doug Birdsong in the final segment of the program before 5 o'clock as we get ready for the Patriot League Championship Tournament game between Bucknell and Lehigh. We'll talk about the big players in that game and how one of those big players, Bucknell, has handled quite well. Again, we'll have more on that coming up a little bit later on as we get ready for that automatic bid into the big dance. Can the Bison go dancing again? We're going to dance our way into a newscast with Sarah Bartlett. She'll be coming up to get you caught up on everything that's been going on. Plus, we'll try and sneak in some talk about Peyton Manning. Hey, surprise! He's not a Cole anymore. I think we're all shocked about that, aren't we? This is the Steve Jones Show on WKOK.
Sports talk where your voice counts. This is the Steve Jones Show on WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, filling in for Steve Jones, here's Kevin Herr.
It is Kevin Herr in the Sunbury Motors Studio. Steve Jones on his way to call the Big Ten tournament, actually in the air as we speak, unless, of course, they got fogged out of leaving State College. But after looking outside here, I don't think he's gotten fogged out this time. The other day, they were on their way back and ended up getting fogged in from being able to land and ended up spending the night in a Pittsburgh hotel. I don't know. I don't know why you complain about it. It's like a free night vacation. I don't know, I'd be all right with that, actually. But anyway, we'll have more of Steve's conversation with Malcolm Moran coming up. Also, this next hour, we'll have Ali Stevens' conversation with Vince Papale, talking a little bit about when he was an Eagle and how all that came about. Of course, many of us know, not only because of being Eagles fans, but also because of watching the movie. And, of course, mentioned earlier, Fran Fisher will be coming up. If you missed that earlier this month, we'll have Fran, excuse me, last month, actually, we'll have Fran Fisher and his conversation with Steve Jones as they reminisce a little bit coming up in the 4 o'clock hour. And then we'll wrap things up with Doug Birdsong getting ready for the Patriot League Championship Tournament game tonight at Soika Pavilion. It is sold out. And as Steve said yesterday, if you have a ticket to the game, make sure you definitely use it. That's going to be a dandy of a game. Bucknell and Lehigh. And again, we'll talk more about that to get you ready for tip-off, which is scheduled for 7 o'clock. But as we promised, a continuation of Steve's conversation with Malcolm Moran. He's the night chair in sports journalism and society at University Park, a longtime reporter for the USA Today, New York Times, Newsday, Chicago Tribune. And Steve has more.
We're with Malcolm Moran, who for over 30 years wrote at Newsday, New York Times, Chicago Tribune, USA Today, and of course is the night chair in sports journalism and society in the College of Communications at Penn State, and an old friend on top of that. The fact that this week is the Big Ten tournament, and Malcolm, you'll be going out there. I'll be there. They use the same rules and regulations as they do in the NCAA tournament. Everything to you're only allowed 22 on the bench, to the fact that after a 10-minute, quote, cooling off period, the locker room is then open. And, of course, the BCS, same story. Locker room is open after a cooling off period. Are you surprised the fact that the number of schools that have gone through conference tournaments, that have gone through the NCAAs, and now the growing number that have gone through a BCS experience and, quote, haven't been harmed by an open locker room, haven't decided it was okay?
It is a little surprising. You know, and the other thought about that I had just the other day, just in terms of the recruiting process and how one of the factors at the major college level is that a factor that can make a school attractive for a highly recruited athlete is that we as a school can help you get to the NBA, to get you the exposure, to help you get to the NFL. Well, if you're going to go to the NBA or the NFL, that's the way things work after the game. And you think back to the growth of people when Larry Bird was a senior at Indiana State. At a certain point in early February, they cut things off because Larry had some difficult personal issues in his family. And as people were becoming more aware of him across the country, that question was coming up more and more as people were coming into Terre Haute to do profiles, and he was having a hard time with it. And basically ask, can we just stop this? I mean, could we? I'll talk after games, but I'm having a hard time dealing with all these questions about my personal life for people coming in to do longer stories about me. So they cut it off. Well, he gets to the NBA where you're around pretty much the same people on a regular basis, and he became a delight to deal with after games, and really in many ways became a go-to guy in the Celtics dressing room because he was such a leader, and therefore what he thought and said was a reflection on the state of the franchise at that moment. So, I mean, that's another element in this that schools might want to consider. I think back to how Patrick Ewing's persona really took a hit because of the way when John Thompson the Elder was coach at Georgetown and he shut things down and you had so little access to Patrick and the other Hoyas. Now, like you mentioned tournament policies, when the Hoyas would get into the tournament, John would do absolutely anything that was in that handbook. And if that handbook said the dressing room was supposed to be open for X minutes after a game, he would be open. He would not be open for X plus 1 minute, but he cooperated with the rules. But it really wasn't until a number of years into Patrick's NBA career where he appeared to feel comfortable with the inevitable give and take that you need to have with the media as a prominent professional athlete. And having covered him since his freshman year, the thing that was really moving to me was when the Knicks retired his number years later, and he's bantering with the crowd, you know, when the microphone is in his hands at center court, and he's bantering with 19,500 people about, now we've had our ups and downs now, and I almost had tears in my eyes because it showed how much he was capable of, and it was really sad that, you know, that whole Hoya paranoia thing evolved from, you know, what really was an unnecessarily tight media policy.
In fact, I mentioned earlier Kurt Warner when we were talking about a setup to this. The Kurt Warner that I talked to in 1979 was a far different Kurt Warner than I talked to in 1982. Far different. Introspective, leader, articulate. Instead of giving you two-sentence answers, because, again, you know, you're not sure of yourself at that time, all right? You're not sure. Actually, 1980, because obviously in 1979 as a freshman he would not have been allowed to talk, but I'm talking about 1980. To a guy who then in 1982 is giving you longer answers, thoughtful answers, because I think because once you go through it and you get through it and you understand, I mean, not everybody's like this, Malcolm, but I mean, I think that's an example of growth and maturity and how somebody can change over time through the process.
I couldn't agree more. And as somebody who was on that side of the fence for a while, I mean, the most fun for me was exactly that kind of thing. I mean, watching young people grow and mature into roles and become more comfortable to the point where if you get to know them a little bit, by the time they're a senior, you can kind of joke with them about what it was like when, you know, when they first showed up and they'd call you Mister. You know, and that always became like a point of contention. Like, at what point do I need to say, listen, you're being very kind, and I appreciate what you're saying, but if you call me Mister one more time, I'm going to smack you in the head. You know? and you develop that kind of relationship, and more to the point, because this is like why we're all doing this, you can describe that growth to your audience, and rather than having an audience that kind of depersonalizes all these people, especially young people, I mean, to have a better understanding of the growth and what happens when they're in such a high-profile situation. I mean, think of, you know, all the drama that's going to be unfolding in the next 3 to 4 weeks. I mean, these aren't just robots. I mean, these are people with real-life problems and stresses and worries, and, you know, and all of a sudden one of them finds himself on a foul line with 70,000 people around him, and, you know, it's make or miss, win or lose. I mean, there's an awful lot there beyond what the score is that audiences really do need to know. And the more access you can get to these people to let them tell their stories, I think the better it is for everybody.
We're with Malcolm Moran. One more brief segment with Malcolm. He said he could give us about 40 minutes today. And in the John Thompson spirit, we'll give him no more than 40, and we'll not give him 41, but we won't give him 39 either.
Well, and you can have Mary Fenlon standing at the door saying,
Fenlon,
three more minutes. We know. It's okay.
It's
good
okay.
To see you.
Yeah. Go grade some papers. All right.
More with Steve Jones' conversation with Malcolm Moran coming up. This is the Steve Jones Show on WKOK.
If you want to have a fun day, you have to drive a Hyundai. Sunbury Motors Hyundai is going to make the month of March Sunbury Motors Hyundai Month. During the month of March, test drive any new Hyundai from Sunbury Motors Hyundai, and you'll receive a $15 Brewers Outlet gift card. Why should you test drive a new Hyundai from Sunbury Motors Hyundai? Well, listen to these awards. The 2012 Hyundai Sonata is the winner of Lowest Cost of Ownership by Kelley Blue Book. And the 2012 Hyundai Elantra was named Best Car Under $20,000 by AOL.auto.com. Every new Hyundai comes with a 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain warranty. And every Hyundai purchased at Sunbury Motors Hyundai receives an additional set of tires. If you're looking for a fun day, you have to drive a Hyundai. Sunbury Motors Hyundai in the North 4th Street Auto Plaza, Sunbury, or at sunburymotors.com. The best care, the best attention, in the best facility. It's all at Nottingham Village Senior Living Community. Family owned for over 30 years, Nottingham Village is committed to quality of life. Your life. Comfortable elegance is the staple of Nottingham Village.
March is a madly busy month at Nottingham Village. We're breaking ground any second on our new short-term rehab addition with all the newest technology. On Sunday, March 18th, from 1 to 3, join us at 115 Bristol Lane for a Country House open house and learn how you can live at Nottingham Village for less. And don't forget to visit our wonderful 6th Annual Health and Wellness Fair on Saturday, March 24th, from 10 to 2 in the Retirement Center Great Room. I'm Judy Carr, Marketing Director, and I'll see you there.
Nottingham Village Senior Living Community, 60 Knights Road, Northumberland. For more information, visit online at nottinghamvillage.org. People caring for people. We're Nottingham Village.
Weekdays from 10 a.m. till noon, join Dan Patrick on News Radio 1070 WKOK.
That's something you got to think about. Who would play you in a movie?
Jason Bateman. Not that I had that answer ready.
And you're about what? Are you 6'3", 6'4"?
6'3".
I'm not sure what he is, but most actors you see on television, you think they're 6 foot and they're like 5'6".
They're stumpy. Who would you, I'm thinking? Dude. For you, Jason Statham.
Statham, that's what I was going to say.
Right. Dan will talk all things sports and more. Dan Patrick, weekdays 10 till noon and again from 7 to 10 p.m. Only on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Okay.
Back to the Steve Jones Show. Kevin Herr filling in for Steve Jones today with our final segment in Steve's conversation with Malcolm Moran. And as we've been hearing, Malcolm, the Knight Chair in Sports Journalism and Society in University Park. And we'll have that final segment of the conversation.
We continue with Malcolm Moran, who is the Knight Chair in Sports Journalism and Society in the Penn State College of Communications. And for more than 30 years, although neither one of us wants to admit you and I have done things for over 30 years.
We were very young at the time. That's all I can say.
Very young. Each of us started at 10.
Yeah, it was an elementary school internship program that
yes.
was quite successful.
Yes, very successful. And we're both products of it. Newsday, New York Times, Chicago Tribune, USA Today, among others. Now it's an exciting time. Conference tournament, NCAA tournament. What is to you become more intriguing, championship week or the actual tournament itself?
The actual NCAA tournament?
Yes.
I know where you're going. I mean, I still like the tournament itself because the thing that can be so misleading about conference tournament weeks is that, you know, the participants are still 18 to 22 years old, and like, anybody who has either a friend or a child who is or has been 18 to 22 years old, I mean, when you think about how unpredictable they tend to be, I mean, why would these athletes be any less unpredictable? And so what you see during the conference tournament week can often misguide you, either positively or negatively, I mean, based on what happens. I mean, I just like getting to the NCAA tournament and seeing things unfold that way. And, you know, one thought I had about that's related to this week, you know, with the Lions walking into a buzzsaw in, now I'm going to have to train myself not to use the word Conseco anymore, Steve.
I know, same here.
I'm used to this. But if not for Christian Watford's shot early in the season, the whole plot line that everybody would be talking about now would be completely different.
And it would be 1976.
Right. Can the Cats do it, especially with this freshman cast? I mean, that would have been an overwhelming discussion that would have enveloped them the same way it enveloped the Patriots in the Super Bowl a couple of years ago.
Right.
And, I mean, if I'm a Kentucky fan, I'm sending thank you notes to Christian Watford every day because he really did take an enormous load off of their shoulders.
He did. And, by the way, I'm completely with you. The NCAA tournament is still the far more intriguing to be around. Conference tournaments, I think, are great. I think they're fun. they certainly bring with the excitement, especially when automatic bids are on the line for conferences where that's the bid. But the NCAA is still the national championship tournament, so I'm with you all the way on that.
Right.
When we get to the Big Ten tournament coming up, the intrigue that is a little bit different this time is that for the first time since the tournament has gone to Indianapolis, and ironically, it's the fifth and final year of the run there before it goes back to Chicago next year and starts alternating. So for the first time since they've done this, Indiana and Purdue are both really good, and they're both playing on the opening day. The complaint about Indianapolis has been, actually the last couple of years, been attendance, which I think people have assumed, oh, I'm sure it's sold out. It has not been. Especially opening day. That's going to change this time around for them, I would think. It's going to be pretty big crowds, especially on opening day.
I would expect attendance will not be an issue.
Yeah.
And I can say this with some expertise since I was married in Bloomington. And I have a bride who graduated in 1981, which was a championship season, and a brother-in-law who graduated in 1987, which was a championship season, to which I said, no. Like, unless you grew up in Westwood in the 60s and early 70s, no family should have two senior year national championships at once. But they were talking earlier in the year, and my brother-in-law said to my wife, you remember what it was like when, like, you had to plan your whole day so that you wouldn't miss the game, regardless of who they were playing? That's what it's like again. I mean, and an interesting point that Dan Dockich made on the air recently is that he thinks, and he has played there and coached there, he thinks that the fan base is even more energized now because the drought and all the embarrassment from the Sampson era created a new appreciation for how hard it is to be consistently good, and how they probably did take the success of the Knight era for granted for quite a while at the end. And so, I mean, that thing is up and running now, and I mean, it's going to be a wild scene, and I think it's going to be good for a Penn State team in growth mode, because these guys are going to get the full force of what it's like to play in that kind of challenging environment, and that's only going to make them grow long term.
I agree. And for Indiana, what I find interesting, though, is that it's a fragile mix with them. Zeller has meant so much. You have to remember that most of the players on this Indiana team, Jordy Hulls, Christian Watford, Burdell Jones, have never had success until now.
Right.
And that's why when I saw them lose the Nebraska game the way they lost it, it reminded me that they had not had success before, because they lost that game in a way where a team that hasn't had success does lose.
No, I agree completely. I mean, they're, for a team that has played at a much higher level, there still is that feeling of vulnerability. And in fact, one of the plot lines of the IU season throughout much of it was the struggle on the road.
Yeah.
Which is an inevitable growing pain of a group that is learning how to do this together for the first time. So it is going to be interesting to watch. But road conditions will not be a problem.
No.
This week. All you have to do is walk the streets and look for the red, and you'll be reminded of that.
Yeah, no question. In fact, they're 18-1 in Bloomington. Bloomington's a 60-minute trip from there to Indianapolis. And, of course, with Purdue playing in the same day, they play in the evening bracket, I believe. I think they have the 8:30 game. Attendance, as you said, will be no problem whatsoever. As wide open a Big Ten tournament as we've seen in a while, especially with three co-champions?
Oh, I would think so. And to me, the clue for that is, I mean, just look at the quality of some of the teams playing on the first day.
Right.
I mean, you've got several teams playing on the first day that you could make a strong case for getting to Sunday. And I think that speaks a lot to the depth of talent in that league.
And we just talked about two of them. Indiana and Purdue are two teams that could get to Sunday as a possibility. And then there's the Northwestern story. Only BCS school not to make it. Right now, Joe Lenardi has them, I think, 34 on his line out of 37, which is great for them. One would think that opening day is crucial for them. They win that, I think that monkey may finally be removed from their back.
Well, I mean, their plight is somewhat familiar to what the Lions were looking at this time a year ago.
No question.
No, I mean, a challenging first day, and then each step after that becomes that much more significant. And, I mean, I just think that situation is one of the most remarkable stats in college sports. That when you, I mean, Northwestern has had some very good players. And, I mean, I would put it to you this way. I mean, if we were having this conversation in the summer of 95, and I was to say, choose one of the following two scenarios, only one is going to be true. Scenario A, Northwestern will win or share three of the next six Big Ten football championships and go to the Rose Bowl and almost beat SC. Or, two, Northwestern will go to one NCAA tournament in the next 6 years and lose a first-round game.
It would be the NCAA tournament. There's no way, based on the history of Northwestern football, especially post-era Parsegian, that you would ever conceive that they would be in the Rose Bowl. And, of course, Ron Vanderlinden was a critical part of that on the coaching staff.
Absolutely. And so, I mean, for them not to get in all these years is just amazing. And, you know, and it's reached the point where Bill Carmody has started taking a little heat in Northwestern, and so if for no other reason than to put that to rest, I mean, what coach in America would welcome the chance to coach against one of his teams?
I mean, Malcolm, 2 years ago, we're in Indianapolis, and it is a foregone conclusion among those in the media room that Bill Carmody is gone, and
right.
The rumors are circulating. 2 years ago, he's gone, and Dick Girardi and I looked at each other and thought, "Are you crazy?"
Oh, I know.
You know who you are?
Oh, I know. I know. And he spoiled them to a great degree. So, I mean, it would just be great to see them be rewarded. And I mean, that would be probably as closely scrutinized a first-round game as you could have. And one thing I can tell you, knowing the number of Medill graduates that appeared in Pasadena that day, you know, and one of them kept grabbing my thigh every time anything went wrong, I mean, I don't know if there would be room at Press Row to accommodate all the applications from Medill graduates if the Cats ever got in.
They get Minnesota, by the way, in the opening round on Thursday. I think if they clear that hurdle, I think that's going to be good enough for them. I think they've built up enough to get there, but we'll find out. Malcolm, promised I wouldn't keep you beyond a certain point. We're going to keep that promise. Thank you so much. Can't wait to see you out in Indianapolis.
And same here, and anytime through March, and it's one of the fun times of the year. Anytime you need anything, just let me know.
I think we're going to do that. I think we can have a couple fun weeks here coming up.
Sounds good to me.
All right, Malcolm Moran.
Great travels.
Yes, you too, my friend. Malcolm Moran with us here on the show today. Great to have him with us.
Steve Jones Show here on WKOK. Steve, as mentioned there, talked with Malcolm Moran earlier this week and is on his way. Actually, both of them actually are on their way to the Big Ten Tournament game coming up tomorrow here on WKOK at 1:30. So we'll have an abbreviated Steve Jones Show coming up after the game. We still have another hour to spend together, and it's a busy one, too. Vince Papale will be with Allie Stevens in a few moments. Fran Fisher's conversation with Steve Jones coming up. And I'll talk with Doug Birdsong as we get you ready for Bucknell and Lehigh from the Soika. This is the Steve Jones Show on WKOK News, coming up next with Sarah Bartlett.